The new season is officially up and running, and we have another stellar cast for you this week on the official EFL podcast. What better way to start the season than with a hat-trick? A terrific tight kicked off his league season in some style.
I got the first one, I was just happy we got that to go 1-0 up, and then I got the second, and honestly I wasn't even thinking about the third, because I think last year I should have had one and they ruled me offside, and I was just thinking, yeah, it's just not going to happen.
The evergreen Mark O'Brighton takes on the 72 in 72, which is well worth a watch.
Hartlepool? Hartlepool, no.
And after a five-star showing on the opening weekend, our third guest shows it's not all about just one team in League Two.
We knew the attention's going to be on Wrexham. That's, you know, it has been for the last 2 years, you know, in the National League, and it will continue that way. I understand it. I actually think it's healthy and good for football in general. But I think we did our talking on the pitch.
Welcome to the official EFL podcast. Goal scoring, of course, is the hardest job in football, and strikers are a very, very unique bunch. I'm glad to say that we've got a man here who knows all about finding the back of the net. 16 last season, 3 so far this season. It's Barnsley striker Devante Cole. Devante, thank you so much for joining us. How's tricks?
Yeah, can't complain. Obviously, a good start to the season, so, you know, I'm just looking forward to the rest of it.
So you get a long pre-season, you work your socks off in pre-season, you want the first game to go well. Scoring 3, putting 7 past the opposition, that's beyond your wildest dream, surely?
Well, to be fair, I wouldn't say it was a long pre-season for us. It was very short after the playoff final, which didn't go our way. So I think coming back after that, it was just trying to, you know, reset. And then going into the first game, I think, you know, you always want to start well, and I don't really think anyone thought we put 7 past them, and then obviously to get a hat-trick as well, which just it's even better, really.
Talk to me about the end of last season, the reaction to that, and what you've got to process, because as you say, it's a long season, it's an emotional season, you get to the biggest game at Wembley, things don't quite go your way, then you've got to go away, regroup pretty quickly. How tough is that to get yourself, first and foremost, in a position where you can relax and switch off, and then secondly, get yourself back up and going again to start a new season?
I think very tough, to be fair. I think the way we lost it in the last seconds, I think that hurt everyone then. You know, we came so far last season with the team we had, and like a lot of the boys, and you know, we've lost a few now, so I think coming back in after, I think we only got 3 weeks off in the end, it was hard to get going again, and obviously uncertainty, like we didn't have a manager at the time, so I just think there was a lot up in the air. But so I think, you know, the first game of the season is just, it's massive obviously, and then, you know, starting like that, it's always good.
From the point of view of, as you say, because you talk in such a kind of magnanimous way about people moving on and managers moving on. I mean, you've been in the game long enough to know that that is absolutely part and parcel, isn't it, of football clubs. Has it been tough to say goodbye to one manager and welcome another one? Is it just part of your job? Is it your responsibility as a player just to get on with it?
I think, do you know what? It's almost just part of the job now, so when he went, I think for me that's probably no real surprise. You know, he's done well, and I think when a lot of the boys went, there was no surprise. And you know, if there was to be more that possibly went, then I wouldn't be surprised, because I think, you know, everyone's done so well that, you know, in football everyone wants to move on and go and play at, you know, the higher level. So I just think it's a part of football. You kind of have to accept it. You know, it's hard obviously when, you know, you've had such a close-knit team, but I just think, you know, it's part and parcel of the job now.
Does it feel like there's a responsibility on players like yourself with that experience to make sure that that transition is relatively smooth for Barnsley?
Yeah, for sure. I think because we've got such a young squad, I mean, you know, they don't feel that old in football now. I think at most other places I'd be slapped right in the middle, but here, you know, I'm one of the oldest. So I think for me, for sure, but it's just making sure, you know, that I'm doing my bit, and then, you know, hopefully everyone else, you know, looks at me and then does the same thing.
Does it fly by, that side of it, where you say you feel, particularly in your squad, as one of the older ones? I mean, 28 in any other profession is just a baby, just getting started, whereas in football. Do you get any of the younger lads coming to you and asking you for advice, for words of wisdom, for things that they need help dealing with?
To be fair, I think, you know, every now and then, but not so much. And like, as I said before, I don't even feel like I'm at that age, but I understand definitely in our squad, so I just think it's one of them where I probably have to take a bit more responsibility on, and I just, you know, kind of enjoying that role, to be honest.
Goals, of course, are what traditionally you would judge a striker on, but your hold-up play, your link-up play, your development of the way that your team moves up through the thirds. That seems to be a real key part of what your rounded game is. Is that something that you've come to personally? Is it something that managers have relied on to? Is it something that's grown in your game as you've got older?
I think for sure it's definitely grown. I think, you know, growing up where I did coming through City, I think I was always taught, you know, to get on the ball and be able to link up and not just be able to do one thing. So, but I think definitely as I'm getting older now, I think it's, you know, it's coming to me more and more, and it's something that I'm, you know, I'm still learning. There's still a lot of things I can improve on, but I think, you know, that's one of those things that's definitely getting better and better.
You mentioned Manchester City. I mean, it's hard not to keep a keen eye on a team that wins the treble. But it's the development of that football club, what you've seen from inside of that football club. It looks like a pretty magical place. Is it a place you've got fond memories of from yesteryear?
Yeah, I think I've got very good memories of it. You know, I spent so long there and a lot of the boys I played with there. So I just think seeing where they are now, it's amazing to see. And I think, you know, Pep's taken them to another level. But I think when the money came in, it was always going to go that way because everything they had set up, the new training ground, which was amazing. I just think it was only going up. And I think the last few years, they've just proved that.
If you experienced that very early on, does that create expectations that you carry with you throughout your career? Does it give you a nice comparison of, well, that's how that super club is run? A footballer's career can go to X, Y, Z, different places, different teams. And let's be honest, 99% of the teams that you walk into after Man City won't have the same facilities as Manchester City by virtue of the money involved. But so how does that set you up as a younger player moving through your career? Is it a case of that's half an eye on where you want to be, but an understanding that a broad footballing career takes in all different places, geographically and from a standard point of view?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like, you know, coming through City, it's almost like you strive for the best, so you always want to be at the best. You know, it might not happen, but I think me going to different places kind of accepted that there's no one really going to be near City's level. I think, you know, there's obviously all the teams in the Premiership now, 100%, you know, the facility's going to be amazing. Mm. But I just think everywhere else, you know, you're going to have to accept that, you know, it's not going to quite be at that level, but it's still going to be at a very good level. So I think for me, that was when I first went on them when I was younger, I accepted that. So it's never been too hard to just, you know, adjust to anything else. But I think now, I think everyone else is working on the facilities and it's getting better and better elsewhere.
Talk to us about the mindset of a striker, about what is your process, obviously very regularly finding the back of the net. Is it something that comes naturally? Is it something that you've worked on? Is it something that you seek advice on?
I think something that definitely comes naturally. I think definitely something I seek advice on as well. You know, I think the assistant coach last year was very good with me, Martin Patterson, and, you know, John Stead's coming in. He's been good for me. So I think, you know, it's always helped me, you know, working with ex-strikers. You know, you can ask them little bits, but then I think a lot of it comes naturally. It's just, you know, what I've always done. So I think, you know, it's working on that and then them seeing little bits of my game I can improve on, you know, and hopefully it's just take me to another level.
And when you are in the midst of a game where you get a goal, the second one follows, is there a sense that the third's coming? Can you sniff it out? It must be quite of a fine line between a little bit of desperation that you want the hat-trick, but also the acceptance that if the chance comes, then you'll be able to bury it.
Yeah, do you know what's mad? I think this one, I got the first one, I was just happy we got that to go 1-0 up, and then I got the second, and I wasn't even thinking about the third, because I think last year I should have had one, and they ruled me offside, and I was just thinking, it's just not going to happen, I wasn't offside. But then I think when I got it inside half, and I looked up and there was no one there, I was thinking, oh, it's on here. And then luckily, Cads left it for me for it to roll in. So I think after that, it was kind of just like, oh, I've done it. It didn't really sink into probably like when I got home, really. And I had the boys, they're like, oh, I've actually got one now. Happy days.
So what happens? Do you get all the lads to sign it? Do you get the manager to sign it? Pride of place somewhere?
All the boys to sign it. Then I think I'll probably get the shirt in a frame somewhere. And that'll be it. It's just a little reminder. But, you know, it was a very good day.
Fantastic. So the change in management, the change in manager, two young managers that we're talking about in relative terms, of course. Yeah. What's any big differences so far between what you've seen under Michael and what you've seen under Neil?
I think Neil's probably a bit more laid back compared to how Michael was, to be fair. But I think all managers are different. You know, he's had a bit of a different playing style. He's changed a few things that he didn't want to change too much from last year, which is understandable because we did so well. But I think it's still early days. He's only been in there like 5 weeks now, I think. And I think he's still like changing things and putting his print on things. But, you know, it's been positive so far, you know. And I think a lot of the boys have liked what he's had to say. So I think we're looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. And is also, you talked about Wembley at the start of the chat. You talked about how it finished. A very, very close game. Decisions 2 and 4 for your side. How much of a motivation is that? I mean, we use the word heartbreak. That disappointment, shall we say, from not getting over the line in that final. How much of that fuels what goes on this season? Has it been spoken about in the dressing room? Has the new manager referenced it at all?
I think he's referenced it in saying, you know, you got there last season, you know, that's obviously going to be a name again, but it's not really been spoken about. And I think a lot of us were hurt by the way, you know, we was lost. I think even as boys, we probably not really brought it up too much. We just kind of, we lost a game, we went away and it was kind of done. I just think the way it happened, it was a bit of a shock really, because, you know, we fought so hard for it. So I think, you know, it's something everyone's of course going to be aiming for quietly again, but there's a lot of games on and there's a lot of things that can happen. And I just think it's, you know, getting our heads down now for this to the start of the season and then going from there.
With the start of the season, you've had two games, of course, one in the league, one in the Carabao Cup. When you think about the season to come, I mean, it almost feels at the start, doesn't it? Like there's an infinite amount of games stretching over the horizon forever. And then before you know it, it's Christmas and Boxing Day. Before you know it, it's Easter. The next minute, you're looking around thinking, we've run out of games now. What does it feel like right now? How do you feel physically? How do you feel mentally? How do you feel emotionally at the start of another season for you in professional football?
I think this one, I'll be honest, I think it's almost come around too quick because it was so short. Like when the season started, I was like, I'm here already. Like we played the final 6 weeks ago, which sounds mad saying, but we literally did. So I think for me, it's kind of looking forward now and being like, well, there's a lot of games to come. But I think towards the end of last year, we were playing like 7-8 games a month. We had that many games that it was just continuous. So I'm kind of looking forward to it being a bit quieter before it gets busier again.
How does the body feel after this pre-season? You say it's a short one, which I suppose is a double-edged sword because you are off for a little break, but in a more positive way, that's less time for you to lose that real peak fitness. So when you come back, and this is me talking, bear with me, Devante, because this is me from my experience of a very long time ago playing football. You'd spend 2 weeks searching high and low for where they'd put the footballs, and then after 2 weeks, they'd give you something to it. And maybe given the lineage, maybe the old man's talked to you about that type of stuff. But how that's changed, it seems to me to be very technical, very tactical from the first day. And I presume, given the way that you play football, that's absolute music to your ears, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think no one likes running. It is what it is. Like, if you do, you do. I just think you're mad. But I think the balls are out day one after you know, the fitness test. And I just think the first week of pre-season, no matter what, it's never going to be nice. Even if you are fit, it's just one of them. So I think once you get through that, you know, the ball's going to be out, you're going to be getting back on it, and then it's just about finding, like, your touch, your sharpness, just going forward. So I think for me, once that first week's out of the way, I can kind of just, like, take a breath and be like, right, okay, here we go now. A few more weeks of this before the season starts, yeah.
So from that point of view, and seeing what goes into that and experiencing different management structures and different clubs, given, I mean, you're right in the middle, the meat of your career, and this is where you really want to make hay, don't you? Have you got any thought whatsoever about Devante Cole as a coach, as a manager, as a part of a staff anywhere? Is that something that floats your boat in years to come?
That's not even crossed my mind yet. I feel like I'm just coming into probably like the best years now, so I think I'm still focused on doing my best now, you know, and going higher again, you know, going back to the Championship and just kicking on again. So I think really next few years, it's just pure focus on that for me. And then I think maybe like 3-4 years, my mind might turn again and I'll be like, well, what about coaching? But it's not crossed my mind yet. And I know it's there. And I started my badges when I was at City because it's something they made us do. I've not gone through and finished that. But I just think it's probably something in the back of my head, but not really in front right now.
This is an older man telling you that it'll fly by like some avuncular uncle or something. Don't worry. You focus on the here and now, because obviously without focusing on the here and now, the future never happens, does it? You mentioned last season in the run-up to the playoff final about the team being young and fearless. Is there that same feeling, that same energy about the Tykes this season, given what you've experienced, given, yes, there have been a few changes, James Norwood, for example, moving on. But as ever, as you've already alluded to, that opens gaps for the people. It makes gives clubs an opportunity to freshen up the playing staff. Is the crux of what it means to be a Barnsley player right now to be fearless and have that youthful kind of vibe about you?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's, and that's why it's probably weird, but there's no one above 30. So I think that says it all, you know. It's a young squad. It's probably even younger this year. So we'll be young and fearless again. And, you know, a few of them who come in didn't experience last year, so they've not got that, you know, that almost bit of damage from last year. So again, you know, that helps. And with us, who was here last year, who have the experience of that, who wants to go one better, I just think, you know, it's a good thing. And if we all come together, you know, obviously 7-0, it's almost a weird one. There's only, you can almost only go down from that. But of course, we want to go up. So it started off well, and hopefully we can just continue.
It's an intriguing way to start, because you want the best possible start, and you did get the best possible start. So suddenly everyone's looking around going, well, obviously Barnes are going to win the league now. So you've got to temper that expectation with reality, haven't you? This is a question straight out the pages of any of the old traditional football magazines. But I'm intrigued. I'm really intrigued, because I get the chance to speak to lots of managers, lots of players, lots of people across football. But the ones that are in there putting the shirt on every couple of days, what do you love about the job the most?
I think it's a hard one just to sum up. I think really it's just, for me, it's something different. Like once you're out there on a Saturday, I think walking out, you're there like, oh yeah, I did miss this for a few weeks. So I think it's just that feeling. Then, you know, it's scoring the goal. It's just being in and around that, you know, the family's atmosphere, the everything. And then I think, you know, day to day, it's just going to train and just having a laugh really. Like, with your mates, that's it. You know, it's hard sometimes. You get up, it's raining, you don't want to go outside, it's cold. But I just think, I just love going in every day really and just having a laugh and then doing something that you do love really. I think that's the easiest thing about it. And I think, you know, I've heard everyone say when you retire, you do miss it. And I can understand why, because for a few weeks, you do miss those little kind of things, you know, like the group chats, just having everyone around, like it wouldn't be the same. So I think definitely that side of it, yeah.
It's funny because it's in direct contrast, and this is absolutely how it should be too. I remember speaking to Michael Duff last year, and they loved every part of every facet of the job, but the bit they hated the most was kickoff and full time, because the managers work with the players all week. Every single session that he's done, all the coaching staff, and then inherently he says at 3 o'clock, please put into practice everything that I've done, everything that I've told you. And that's your time to shine, isn't it? Is that,
then it's over to us.
Like? Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. You can't stop the session, blow the whistle. So I get that for sure, because, you know, he likes to be cover everything. But then when you're on the pitch, it's down to you. You can do your own thing and almost, you know, ignore what he said. But I get that as a manager, it makes sense.
So this season, personally, have you got any tallies that you're going after? Any record, any landmarks that you want to achieve? And also, as a group, as a collective, Barnsley, is it eyes very much firmly on the higher end of the division?
Yeah, I think personally, I've always got my targets and I kind of just keep them in-house. But as a striker, I think it's probably not too dissimilar to any other striker. You know, it's always going to be goals, because, you know, that's our job, what we're paid to do. But I think as a team, I think it's going to be very much looking at, you know, the top half. And, you know, we know it won't just happen, we've got to put in the work. But it's got to be, you know, being around it all season. Then, you know, we get to Christmas and see where we are.
And from a former midfielder's point of view, asking a striker, is it an absolutely essential part of a striker's armoury that they enjoy being the centre of attention?
I don't think it is, you know. not at all. Because if I'm not centre of attention, it wouldn't bother me. I'd probably rather just slip away and, you know, just score my goals and it's done. So I think some people really enjoy it. I'm just one of them. Like, if I am or if I'm not, it doesn't bother me. I just think you've got to be able to enjoy some part of it as a striker, because it is a selfish job and sometimes you should probably pass when you shoot, but then if it goes in, then there's no complaint. So I think, yeah, that side of it, you've got to enjoy what comes of it.
that just reflects the type of strikers that I played with, Devante. You're a much nicer fella and obviously a much better striker as well. And in the words of Roy Keane, of course, you're just doing your job, which you've done so well so far after a hat-trick on the opening day of the season. Devante Cole from Barnsley, we wish you all the very best, my friend, between now and the end of the season, right here from the official EFL podcast.
Thank you.
The thoroughly pleasant Devante Cole there, making scoring goals sound very easy indeed. Next, we're off to Leicester as Mark O'Brien takes on the challenge of naming as many of the 72 league clubs he can in just 72 seconds.
Hi, I'm Mark O'Brien and this is the 72 in 72. Leicester, Coventry, Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Birmingham, West Brom, Walsall, Notts County, Wrexham, Plymouth, Exeter, Colchester, Ipswich, Norwich, Rotherham, Cardiff, Sheffield Wednesday. Where else? Preston, Bolton, Blackburn, Accrington Stanley. Where are we now? Probably some more up north. Hartlepool? Hartlepool now. Then we'll have Hull. Sunderland, Middlesbrough, who's in the playoffs?
Well then, I didn't count off the top of my head, but that's good.
24?
Yeah, so that's respectable.
Very, very impressive there, I'm sure you'll agree. Setting the standard early on from Mark O'Brien, 24 out of the 72 clubs in 72 seconds. Okay, joining us now on the official EFL podcast after a busy opening few days of the brand new season, it's the MK Dons boss, Graham Alexander. Graham, thank you for joining us. A couple of games into the season, I bet you're glad to get going, are you?
It's been a really busy pre-season coming down and straight into it with the players and looking forward to the big kickoff, which obviously was on Saturday. And I've missed that feeling. You know, I realised, you know, just before the game, speaking to my assistant, saying, "Oh, it's been a year since our previous competitive game." And you know, after the game, that feeling, well, it was special. That's what we do it for. It was that emotion after the game. The emotions during the game can be up and down. I couldn't have asked for anything more from the players, to be fair. They were absolutely fantastic.
And of course, given who you were playing on the first game of the season, there was a lot of focus, a lot of attention on Wrexham. So does that mean that you were able to get on with your business, get down, get your work sorted between the start of pre-season and the first game of the season? And you went there, you spoiled the party. You're a team that's been very, very successful. You're a team that's reacting to what came last season. How did you feel the balance of attention was, and was it fair for you?
I'm not sure about fair, but we knew the attention's going to be on Wrexham. That's, you know, it has been for the last 2 years in the National League, and it will continue that way. I understand it. I actually think it's healthy and good for football in general. But I think we did our talking on the pitch. That's the reality, you know. And listen, Wrexham have done fantastic things over the last 2 years. You know what they've achieved. The manager, the players, and obviously the owners. So it was, but we were playing 11 players. Yeah. You know, that's what we made clear to our team, that we were just playing 11 players, not everything else around it. And I believed massively in the 11 players that we had out there to start with, and obviously the couple of subs that we brought on that were good enough to win a game of football. That was it. So, and after the game, you know, you see reports and you might get two lines, and then the other 156 lines are on, you know, Wolverine and Deadpool and all that. But look, it's how football's gone. It's an entertainment business, and the profile is massive, and we get the benefits of that sometimes. But the biggest thing for me would have been anyone being at the game, watching the game, our players would have took massive credit from that because of what they did on the pitch, and ultimately, perhaps that's what football is about. You know, it's about your credit for your performances, and my players perform to the maximum.
And 3 points being the most important thing, as you say, if it's a couple of lines that ends with saying MK Dons won and scored 5 goals and got 3 points, that's all that matters. Speaking of 5 goals, looking at the game, reading your thoughts after the game, as I know managers do, it's nice to score 5. It absolutely bugs the life out of you that you've conceded 3 goals as well. And I can see it in your face now as you're not I'm trying to pull up old thoughts. But you spoke after the game about wanting to kill your players in pre-season, wanting to see how fit they were. They showed you that. They went again. They managed the game. What did you learn from them for that first competitive game? What did you learn about the players that you've got, and what's the work to do?
Yeah, it was, I've mentioned it just before we went out that I've tried to get, or it looks like I've tried to kill half a year in pre-season. not the physical stuff was tough, but it was to see their mentality and who's going to keep going, who's going to be there the next day to go again. You know, because that's what the English game is. You know, for 50 games, 10 months, is constant. It's and if you can't prepare yourselves mentally for the next challenge, however soon that happens, then we're not going to be successful. So I wanted them to go into a game thinking, well, nothing can be as tough as training. So the game is almost like a
release.
So they get to the side, it can't be as tough as what we've gone through. We've overcome so many things. And it was, I know over the 6 weeks we had, players were doing things in week 5 and 6 that they didn't think were possible in week 1 and 2. So that's progression of our mindset, because we know MK have always got very good technical players. And I believe they didn't get relegated last season on talent. It was other aspects. So we have to build up every aspect of a winning football team. And there's so many of those to be good at. But I'm a big believer in the mind, overcoming so many hurdles. If the mind's not prepared to do it, forget about how fit you are and everything like that. So we asked them on day one of pre-season just to commit mentally to absolutely everything we put in front of them. Everything else will follow if you commit mentally. And they've done that. It hasn't been a smooth sort of journey. It's been bumps along the way in pre-season games and really days where they were on their last legs. But the result on Saturday justified in a small way, because we're looking for prolonged success, not just a one-off game. But it gave us an early indication that the players are capable of much more than what they maybe believe in themselves. So we're trying to build up that confidence in themselves, really, that self-esteem, that will to win, that trust in each other, that will take us or take our talent to the maximum levels. So it was great to see, because and especially this year, we've seen it. It's been documented after the weekend, the amount of extra minutes that are being played. The 90-minute game is gone now. It's 100 minute plus. So we have to be prepared to not be shocked by added 12 minutes, added 13 minutes, this, that, the other. And we have to be physically prepared and mentally prepared to be able to keep playing and keep winning in those periods. So
on that note, Graham, when you mentioned that, because it's obviously very, very topical with what we've seen from the opening weekend, and obviously we heard a lot from the likes of Pep Guardiola talking about the Community Shield. What's your take on it as a manager and obviously a kind of custodian of football players, with how this is being implemented and what it's for? Because ostensibly it's there to make sure that there's more ball in play time, isn't it, over the course of what the game actually is. So whether it's cut out in the actual time, which means ball's in play longer within 90 minutes, or it's added at the end, what's your take on that and what you've seen so far, what you've experienced?
I can understand why, because we went to the managers meeting in the pre-season, and Howard Webb was discussing it with all the managers why this is being put in place, and I can understand it, because it got to a point where game management, and listen, we've been, you're you use the rules to your own effect. And if you win the game, you see out the game. Listen, I did it as a player. You would have done it as a player. You know, as a coach, you're expecting it. And that's it. So I understand. But it got to a point where every little contact was a stoppage. It was down. And I can understand how the brilliant thing about football, and I think British football in particular, it's action. It's action-packed. You know, and it's constant. So so they want to protect that, certainly in Britain, in England. And so I can understand the reasons behind the new directives. And we're just going to have to get used to it. I think it will be an issue for not just us, but I think supporters missing their trains after games.
Yeah.
Because if they book it too early, and, you know, and I'm thinking about Tuesday night games where you got work the next day and the game's going on for another 25 minutes or so, because, you know, we will get games like that if it's stuck too stringently. So I can see the, and the same every directive when it comes in, it's really extreme, you know, for the first month or so, and then it finds its balance. I hope they stick with a lot of it, because we try to play in a high tempo, intense way anyway, even previous seasons. And sometimes it's hard to do when it's constant ball, but I think it's just got to be managed at home and away the same, you know, that consistency has got to be the same. But I believe that both the referees we've had on Saturday in the league and on Tuesday managed it really well in every aspect of the new directive. So, but I do believe that you need stronger squads because the game's going to go on longer. So I believe that's an aspect that people have to look at, and it's difficult at this level to have, you know, at the Premier League level, you can probably have two for every position of similar quality. At this level, that's not going to happen. So I think that's where the issues could possibly be for the last 15, 20 minutes. The teams with the stronger squads will be in better position.
I was saying something we're all going to keep a keen eye on. Just go back to what you said at the start about that feeling around match day, proper match day. You know what I mean by that, don't you? They call it the competitive nature. And it being a period of time out of the game for you without that kind of feeling. And you described those gaps in between posts. You call it unemployment, and you call it unemployment being a boot camp, being a chance to really kind of dig deep, work out bits about yourself, bits about your management style, look back, look forward. In those intervening periods when there isn't a job, but given the nature of your profession, there will be a job at some stage. How hard is that to deal with personally? And how hard is it to deal with in the sense of your motivation, your keenness to keep going? Because if you want a long career in football management, it seems to me that it's a constant steps of reacting to positions such as that. And obviously you've come through that and you're back in it again, and the door opens and everything's bright and shiny again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a, you know, the first time it happened to me after I left Fleetwood, it was I was like a fish out of water. I didn't know what to do with myself. You know, it was the first time since I was 8 years old that I hadn't been part of a group. You know, and that was really tough. I really felt that, you know, because it was me. You know, we'd had success at Fleetwood, and I lost my job. I wanted to get straight back in. It didn't happen straight away. It happened at the right club at the right time. I do believe in, you know, these things will come along when the time is right. But the time to, the last one was, I was, you know, because it was a mutual decision. I went to the owners at Motherwell, and I felt that the time was right to go away and leave. And they were the same mindset. So it was, I know that gets bandied about a lot, but it was me that instigated the conversation about the time being right.
And once you've done that, and then you come into somewhere like MK Dons, and you've got a nice kind of combination. You have got the Ashhunters, but you've also got the Brooklyn Ilungas, you've got Callum Tripp, you've got young players, you've got established players, you've been able to mould and move a couple around in the time that you've been there. When you do come out of a club and you do need that bit of decompression to go back in again to work with these players, specifically the squad that you've got now, that mixture, does that reinvigorate you once again when you see that effervescence of youth and you see those young players fighting and dying to make it as pros and giving you everything on a match day?
Yeah, definitely. It's look, the enjoyment you get I believe as a coach is, listen, A, winning, is nothing beats that feeling. You know, it's something that's stuck with me every day of my life, basically, about winning, competing. But players forming their careers, players achieving more than what they maybe believe they could, making progress, and that's where you get that sort of emotional sort of payback. That, you know, because ultimately we were those young players once, and someone believed in us, someone gave us the opportunity, someone guided us to have football careers, and we all need them along the way. And part of the responsibility as a coach is to give those opportunities, open those doors for these types of players. But I'm you know, it's really strange because there's a lot of data at MK. You know, when I spoke to Liam Sweeten when I was being interviewed for the role, that I had so much data, not just on the players on team, but also on me as a manager. And I was like, oh, right, that's interesting. What's that like? So it was great. But they, no, he said, you know, I had a real broad width of players that had played for me, you know, older players, a lot of younger players, you know, right across the spectrum. So it wasn't just all experience-based. It weren't just youth-based. And that's how I sort of do manage. I don't look at a player's date of birth. Mm-hmm. I don't think being a 32-year-old makes you experienced, because that experience could be bad experience. It could be negative experience. And obviously, and you could be a really immature 32-year-old that mess about. But then you can get a 21-year-old who's got, you know, intelligent, knows the game, makes right decisions. So I don't judge people on their age. Listen, I was the last person. I played at 19 and I played at 39. And the one thing I fought against was someone judging me by my age. Mm. So I'm not going to turn into a coach and then do that as well. But, you know, these players, you know, we've brought in experience because the squad needed that. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of youth and we needed to have a balance. And I felt, when I was an experienced player, I felt younger because I was playing and training with 21, 22, 23-year-olds who, you know, were born when I was making my debut. But it actually gave me a new lease of life, you know. So I know you can buzz off each other, you know, and have that balance. And I think there's a responsibility from both to help each other. So there's a responsibility from the experienced guys to support these younger boys coming through and give them the benefit of their knowledge. But there's also a responsibility on the younger players to push those experienced ones as hard as possible for the shirt, you know, and grab it off them, because I think that will make our experienced players better. So, you know, it is good. You know, we last week, Phoenix Schultz, young player that's still in the youth team, made his league debut at Wrexham, you know, massive game. He comes off it. And honestly, he joined us in pre-season training due to an injury to another young player. And then we just grabbed him from, because we've brought everyone together. So the academy playing on a pitch just across from us at the same time. And we brought him across, loved his attitude, loved his approach. And he's been with us every day. And now he just made his league debut on Saturday in a massive game. So, you know, and then presenting him with his shirt and changing him on Monday with the rest of the squad. These are moments that, you know, I've missed over the last year. And they're brilliant because they stay with you for years. And hopefully they will for guys like Phoenix.
You can see the energy and you can see the excitement in your face when you're talking, and it's amazing to see. And it just made me think, when you were talking about judging players on date of birth, I mean, as an example goes of what not to do or how not to do that with a player, that's purely your experience, isn't it? I remember playing against you at various points over the course of your career, and it was like, not quite Benjamin Button, but there was an ageless quality to the way that you went about it, and peaking, if you like, as you got older, and that example that you can set to the players that you may be right here, right now at MK Dons in this particular division, in this part of the EFL pyramid, but ability combined with hard work and that mentality that you spoke about before can get you to the Premier League, can get you to the highest level, can get you to international football, can't it?
Yeah, I think that's what's given me the sort of the belief and the confidence that that you can achieve whatever you want to do, you know. And my career, my playing career in particular, you know, it only gets started at 27, 28, as in success at a higher level. You know, I played for 8-9 years in the lower two divisions, joined the right club at the right time with the right manager, with the right motivation for myself to improve, and you know, I know when people ask me a question, you know, how many Scotland caps did you get? And I say, I know what happens, right? I say 40, and they always repeat it back to me like, what? Like 40, you know, because it's like, you know, because I didn't make my Scotland debut till I was 30 years old.
Yeah.
And I played for the next 7 years for Scotland, played 40 times, and it always gets repeated back to me. And then I made my Premier League debut at 37. So
it's staggering, you know,
yeah, it's, because everything happened from, but I knew what I could only get out what I put into it. And in my 20s, my early 20s, I thought it would, I know there was a spell where I just thought it would happen. And I didn't push it as hard enough. And then when I understood what football was really about and what you had to do, then I was a bit of a maniac at times, I think, in my 30s. You know,
I had heard that as well, but I didn't want to mention it.
Yeah, but I remember managers asking me how I felt at 37 on Monday morning, and I was overtired. I was like, absolutely brilliant. I could play a game right now.
Only one answer to that. I'm fine. Yep, go on, leave me alone.
Yeah, but I went the other extreme. I went, absolutely brilliant. I could play again right now. You know what I mean? I went, they need to know my mentality was like,
yeah,
I can do anything you put in front of me. And I want to try and give players that sort of benefit in my experience. And I do believe it's within a lot of people. I wasn't unique in that scenario, but I had things happen at the right time to give me extra motivation, inspiration, and stuff like that. So we try to find that in every player. And because I want them to get to the end of career. I know there's manager or coach at the time, I was like, flipping it. But when I look back now, the respect I have for them, for how they pushed me and molded me, is tenfold. And I want to be that person for players now, you know, that they, I'll be honest with them, I'll push them, I'll stretch them to their maximum. But hopefully in 5 years' time, they look back and go, well, we were successful at that time, and now I'm at this level, or I've done this. I want to be part of that journey for these players and the clubs. You know, I'll take that on with all the four clubs I've managed previously. We've had successful teams at all four. And I know there's players still contacting me from 10 years ago and, you know, still connected with us because of the success and because success together. And that's what we want to create, those memories and times. And I still believe, like my playing career, that I can get to the levels that I did as a player. I just have to keep winning as often as possible, learn, improve, and try and take advantage of any opportunities that come along. But I know that whenever I'm at a club, I was as a player, that I'm 100% fully committed to making that club better, either as a player or as a manager. And I think the more people I can have around me to do that, you know, the staff are so important to us. My assistant, Chris Lequette, who's been with me for 10 years, massive part of that as well, because he had a similar sort of trajectory as a player as well. You know, he made his Premier League debut at 35. After playing. So, you know, it's we're sort of, I hope we're a sort of a living embodiment of what potentially you're capable of as a player, because I wouldn't say we were particularly especially talented players, but I would say we maximised everything we had within ourselves, and we just want players to do that. If you do that, you're giving yourself the best chance.
So let's turn it back to what we've seen already so far. We've had a league game, we've had the Carabao Cup, of course, last night. Moving on from the disappointment of that and what you've seen so far from your team, Tranmere at home, first league home game of the season. Where you are now, the expectation of a club that's come from the division above, I'm not asking you to tell me exactly where you're going to finish, and I'm sure you're ambitious enough to be as high at the table as possible. Is the pressure on MK Dons to be up there come the end of the season in that fighting chance of promotion?
I hope so. I hope so. I think we have to. If the expectation or the pressure isn't on us, that means outside people don't think we're good enough.
Is it?
And I want people to think we're good enough. So we have to hope there's expectation and pressure, because that means that people are looking at what we are as a group of people, a group of players and staff, and believe that we're capable of winning. We have to believe it inside ourselves, and we have to keep driving those levels and standards and expectations up within ourselves. So, you know, it's, you know, if I look back at my last club at Motherwell, we you know, the expectation was to stay in the SBL. You know, get them out of the relegation when we first got there in January, keep them in the league, and then the next season was don't be in a relegation battle. And at the end of that season, we'd won the third most points over 18 months. We'd got them into Europe. We'd finished fifth. So that was from within. That was no one outside putting pressure on us to achieve those things. That was what we created as a group of people, players and staff, to actually stretch what anyone else would expect of us. And so outside expectancy doesn't really change our approach to our work. But, you know, we expect to have the will to win, and we ask ourselves a question before every single game: can we win this game? And the answer has to be yes. But then we have to understand why we can win that game, and then put that into action. So, but a team that's come down from a level above, and I don't want people to think that we should be at the top because we've got a lovely stadium. You know what I mean? People should look at us and go, well, they should be at the top because of the way they approach games, the motivation, the organisation, the talent they've got. That's has to be the why the expectation is on us, not because of, you know, the arena we play in. And that's what we're trying to make everybody understand. It's what we do. You know, it's not what we say. It's not what's around us. It's what we do. And so, yeah, that expectation, that pressure, we want it. We need it to verify what people expect of us, I think.
Well, Grezza, it sounds to me like the current and the future of MK Dons is in very good hands with you, my friend. I'm glad to see you back. It's lovely that you're back in the madhouse. I'll touch base again with you in a few months, see if you're still as happy and smiling as you are now. But you're a welcome addition anytime right here on the official EFL podcast.
Cheers, Brooks. Great to speak to you, mate.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Graham Alexander, Devante Cole and Mark Albrighton for joining us right here. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. Listen, that's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.